Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, June 7th, 2018. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Bulk Waste Still Piling Up at Bloomington Curbs, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Hundreds of Bloomington residents have been leaving their bulky waste at the curb, even though the next free collection isn't until October 1st. And city officials are trying to spread the word that they face fees if they don't remove it. There are nearly 550 people who haven't gotten the message, and there are probably more people who have set material out that our crews have not gotten to and tagged, Public Works Director Jim Karch said Wednesday. As of Tuesday, Public Works employees have tagged 546 locations citywide where bulky waste has been put out at the curb, despite an ordinance change in February that eliminated free every other week bulky waste pickup as a cost-cutting measure. The city understands that not everyone has gotten this message right away, said Karch. I think some people are still wondering if the city is going to take it seriously, and I think some people weren't aware of the changes. In one case, a Chicago-based landlord, unaware of the change, carried mattresses, furniture, and other bulky waste left behind by tenants to the curb in front of two apartment houses he owns in the 1000 block of North Prairie Street. The city's warning tags caught the attention of Christina Dunlap of Atlanta, who was painting houses for the owner, and she called him. I don't think it's a bad deal that the city is only doing the pickups twice a year, but I felt that they should have given more notice to give people more opportunity to get rid of their bulk items, she said. Dunlap said she is trying to help clean out the basement of her elderly mother's Bloomington residence, but we weren't able to do it prior to the last pickup, so now we have to wait until October to help her out. The City Council's decision to limit curbside bulky waste pickup to twice a year and raise monthly fees by $5 each for its two larger garbage carts is expected to close a $1.1 million annual deficit in the solid waste disposal program. We've seen bulky waste at stops all over the community, so it really is a citywide education effort, said Karch. City workers tag the bulky waste and hang notices on doors to let residents know they can dispose of it themselves at the Citizen Convenience Center at no charge, or request a pickup at a cost of $25 per front-end loader bucket. Most people, when they see that, do remove the material, said Karch. If they don't remove the waste within 2 weeks, a city crew will remove it and the fee will be added to their water bill, he said. Residents can request curbside collection through the My Bloomington app or by calling the Public Works Department. That educational tagging process will continue through the summer, and then the city will evaluate what to do next. We really want to be as gracious as we can throughout this change, but there does come a point when we do want to ensure that we have a clean community, Karch said. The number of locations in violation amounts to 2% of the 24,000 households from which the city collects garbage. Aside from bulky waste, garbage will continue to be collected weekly, and recycling and brush will be picked up every other week. The change has allowed the Public Works Department to shift 4 workers from waste collection to working more on streets and sewers. The City Council will consider, possibly at its June 25th meeting, approving the purchase of 2 knuckle boom trucks equipped with extendable claws to increase efficiency in collecting brush and bulky waste. The one-person vehicles would cost $129,463 apiece through a National Joint Powers Alliance contract, said Karch. During the May 1st to 9th citywide spring bulky waste pickup, crews hauled 277 loads of bulk waste weighing more than 547 tons. The spring collection was the beginning of the shift from picking up bulk waste every other week to twice a year at no charge. Last year, the city collected 3,957 tons of bulky waste. The next story is entitled, McLean County Auditor pay headed to a $25,000 cut. By Derek Bay. Bloomington. McLean County board members were careful to say a $25,000 pay cut for the county auditor recommended Wednesday isn't personal. This is solely based on the job responsibilities, not based on individuals or performance of those jobs, said board member Catherine Metzger, after the board's finance committee voted 4-1 for the cut. This is based on what we're seeing in the statutes as well as the work that's being performed. Members said at previous meetings they wanted to slash the auditor's salary from about $100,000 to $75,000 in 2021 because 3 of 4 employees supervised by the position as of 2017 were moved to the treasurer's office on January 1st. The full county board must still sign off on the change June 19th. Committee Chairman David Seltzer said he voted present to be impartial. During previous meetings, he's alluded to his frustration with the current auditor, Michelle Anderson, including for missing committee meetings. She attended Tuesday's meeting and addressed the board on the proposed pay cut in a private session. Speaking to reporters after the meeting, Seltzer said, "My passion could be mistaken sometimes as having a feeling toward eliminating a position. I've had people ask me that this week. I've had people ask me if I was the one championing the cause of producing the salary cut. It's just not the case. I voted present because I didn't feel it was appropriate to vote yes or no." Chuck Erickson voted no on the changes. He previously suggested a $90,000 salary for the auditor and said he's concerned about recruiting candidates to run for a position with fewer duties that pays less than similar elected roles. "The auditor's position brings value to the county that I think is undervalued at what we voted for," Erickson told the Pantograph. "I just don't think a $25,000 pay cut was warranted by what the position actually brings." Seltzer said he hopes to speak to Anderson about expanding or contracting the duties of the auditor's office, though he won't lead an effort to eliminate it. The vote also included changes in salary starting for 2021 for the circuit clerk and coroner, currently Don Everhart and Kathy Davis, respectively. While the county sets salaries for all three positions, changes must be approved at least 6 months before the beginning of each office's next elected term, under state law. Officials previously approved 2019 salary changes for county clerk, sheriff, and treasurer, now Kathy Michael, John Sandage, and Rebecca McNeil, respectively. Those changes are intended to dock elected officials 1 year's pay raise, reflected what happened to non-elected staff last fall, though the sheriff will get a special stipend. County board members also have frozen their own salaries for terms starting this fall. They previously froze salaries from 2016 to 2020. The next article is headlined, "Private Lawyer Sought: Judge to Name New Attorney for Nolan Murder Retrial Claims." By Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A private attorney will be named to represent Misook Nolan on her claim that she deserves a new trial on murder charges in the strangulation death of her mother-in-law. The appointment of a lawyer outside the McLean County Public Defender's Office follows several failed attempts to choose an attorney in that office to assist the Bloomington woman with her post-conviction issues. On Wednesday, recently appointed lawyer Kelly Harms asked to withdraw from the case because she previously worked on the murder case during her tenure with the Public Defender's Office. The county will pay the legal fees for the private lawyer. In her petition for a new trial, Nolan argues that she received inadequate legal representation during her 2012 murder trial on charges that she killed Linda Tida. Judge Robert Freitag admitted frustration with the multiple attempts to assign a lawyer to Nolan's case. Several other lawyers have either had conflicts or not renewed their contracts with the Public Defender's Office. Freitag said he will find a qualified lawyer to work on the murder case before Nolan's next hearing on August 6th. The defendant acknowledged that she understood Harms's situation and agreed to appointment of new counsel. Nolan is serving 55 years for the 2011 slaying of her mother-in-law. Nolan told police she acted in self-defense during a physical altercation with Tida. Evidence at the trial indicated Nolan lured Tida to Bloomington from the victim's home near Chicago with a phony request for Tida to perform translation services. In addition to her murder conviction, Nolan's name has been raised as a potential suspect in the 1998 death of Christina McNeil, who was the 3-year-old daughter of Nolan's former boyfriend, Bart McNeil. He is challenging his 100-year sentence, alleging that the state lacked sufficient evidence to convict him, and Bloomington police did not consider Nolan as a potential suspect. Here's a story entitled, Block Party to Offer Supplies, Groceries, by Julia Evelsizer. Bloomington. An event to benefit students and reduce violence in the community will be Saturday at Sunnyside Park in West Bloomington. Through Decatur-based Ambassadors for Christ Ministries, the Reverend Jesse R. Bates coordinates the Stop the Violence Project, which hosts back-to-school block parties for youths in central Illinois each summer. Families in the area are encouraged to attend the event from noon to 3 p.m. at the park. Free registration begins at 11:30 a.m., which allows guests to play games to win prizes, enter raffles, and receive school supplies and groceries. People can expect to have a lot of fun without any violence. We've been doing this for over a decade, and we've never had a fight or anything. It's a really peaceful event, said Bates, adding he anticipates attendance to top 1,000 people. The event will include games, contests, raffles, entertainment, food, and faith ministry. Prizes include MP3 players, small appliances, and bicycles. Those who register also can claim a free backpack of school supplies for students in preschool through college. Registered families also can receive a box of free groceries donated by Midwest Food Bank. Organizers will distribute 500 backpacks and 500 boxes of groceries. The overall goal is for us to raise awareness about violence in every community. Hopefully, the different agencies that will be there can inform people of ways to get help in their city if they need it, said Bates. Sponsors and participants at the event include Midwest Food Bank, the Bloomington Parks, Recreation and Cultural Arts Department, Bloomington Public Library, and Habitat for Humanity of McLean County. Participating churches are Center for Hope Ministries, Christ Fellowship Church, Hallelujah Worship Center, and Spread Truth Ministries, all of Bloomington. Volunteers are needed to help with the party and can register online at www.stoptheviolenceproject.net or in person at 11 a.m. the day of the event. A second Stop the Violence event will be hosted from noon to 3 p.m. July 28th at Torrance Park in Decatur. The next story is entitled $79,000 for Emergency Aid Available to Local Agencies, by Pantograph Staff. Bloomington. McLean County has been awarded $79,243 from the Federal Emergency Food and Shelter National Board Program, EFSP, United Way of McLean County, announced Wednesday. A local board entrusted with fund distribution is accepting applications from qualified organizations. EFSP provides supplemental emergency food and shelter support to more than 12,000 nonprofit and public food banks, shelters, feeding programs, and homeless prevention organizations in nearly 2,500 counties throughout the country, United Way CEO David Taylor said in a prepared statement. A local board then distributes money among organizations providing emergency food and shelter services in those high-need areas. A national EFSB board of private aid agencies and headed by the Federal Emergency Management Agency distributes funds by county based on calculations for unemployment and poverty rates in each area. The McLean County EFSP Board has representatives of government agencies, information and referral agencies, homeless and faith-based organizations, FEMA affiliates, and United Way. To qualify for funding, organizations must be private, voluntary nonprofits or units of government, be eligible to receive federal funds, have an accounting system, practice non-discrimination, have demonstrated the capacity to deliver emergency food or shelter programs, and have a voluntary board. Funding will go to organizations that provide served meals, food, shelter, rent, mortgage assistance, or utility assistance to underserved populations. Qualified organizations should visit www.uwaymc.org or call 309-828-7383. Applications have been posted in the website. The deadline for completed applications is 4:30 p.m. June 15th, United Way said. Here's an item entitled, Photo of Robbery Suspect Released, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Bloomington detectives on Wednesday released a photo of a suspect in last month's armed robbery at Dunkin' Donuts, 2306 East Oakland Avenue. Police said at 10:21 p.m. on May 27th, a man entered the store, implied he was armed, and demanded money from an employee. The suspect took an undisclosed amount of cash and fled in an unknown direction. Police described the suspect as a black man in his 20s to 30s, about 6 feet tall, weighing 200 pounds, with light skin pigment and a large nose. Anyone with information related to the robbery is asked to contact Detective Steve Moreland at 309-434-2359 or smoreland@cityblm.org. If you want to remain anonymous, call McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. If your call leads to the arrest and indictment of suspects, you may be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000. Here is some state news in a story entitled, Madigan Aid Quits Following Complaint, by John O'Connor and Sarah Zimmerman. Springfield. The Chief of Staff to powerful Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan abruptly resigned Wednesday after an employee accused him of lewd comments and of mishandling complaints of sexual harassment. Sherry Garrett, a $42,000-a-year account technician for the House, told a news conference in Chicago that Timothy Mapes brushed aside her complaints of lawmakers' harassment of her and other women on at least two occasions. She said he made sexually laced comments to her at least twice and joked about sexual harassment training and women's protests against mistreatment. The incidents occurred between the spring of 2013 and just a few weeks ago, she said. We have a serious and pervasive problem in our state government, and I could no longer remain silent about my own mistreatment, Garrett said. We need to force fundamental change, not just lip service, not a quick solution, but real cultural transformation. Hours later, Madigan, the longest-serving state House Speaker in U.S. history, announced that Mapes had stepped down at his request as Chief of Staff, House Clerk, and Executive Director of the Illinois Democratic Party, which Madigan chairs. It's the second time in less than a week that a top Illinois Democrat was forced out following alleged sexual harassment or intimidation. Madigan's Deputy Majority Leader, Representative Liu Lang of Skokie, while denying the allegations as absurd, resigned his leadership post Thursday after a legislative activist accused him of unwanted sexual behavior and later retaliation. The 53-year-old Garrett, a Petersburg resident and state employee since 2009, said after learning of Mapes's resignation that she was relieved and hoped more people will feel safe coming forward, knowing that their words can make a difference. Mapes, 63, whose salary was $208,000, did not return a call seeking comment. Madigan said he had not been made aware of Garrett's complaints and said he would appoint an experienced investigator to review all operations of the House of Representatives. It is clear that the culture needs to change and we need to ensure all issues are dealt with quickly and appropriately, Madigan said in a statement. Having a legendary reputation as a stalwart in the face of adversity, Madigan has been set back on his heels in recent months over his handling of sexual harassment matters. He's been accused of mishandling complaints of sexual harassment by campaign workers against women staffers. One, Alina Hampton, filed a federal lawsuit claiming that her public complaint cost her a promotion. Madigan's spokesman has denied the claim, and lawyers for the speaker on Tuesday filed a motion seeking the lawsuit's dismissal. And last month, Representative Kelly Cassidy, a Chicago Democrat, alleged that Madigan allies, including Mapes, retaliated against her for her outspoken demands for an independent probe of Madigan's actions. Rachel Bold, spokeswoman for Governor Bruce Rauner, applauded the bravery of recent accusers in a statement and said, "We plan to act swiftly to ensure an independent process is in place to investigate future allegations and the culture Speaker Madigan has created." And here's a story entitled, "Teen Nets Probation in Fatal Shooting," by Tony Reed. Decatur. Zachary M. Farrigo was sentenced to 48 months of probation Wednesday afternoon for shooting to death his 2-year-old nephew while playing a game of cops and robbers in Decatur with a real handgun. Farrigo, 18, earlier pleaded guilty in Macon County Circuit Court to involuntary manslaughter, aggravated discharge of a firearm, and obstruction of justice. In a plea deal negotiated by his defense attorney, Steve Purbix, previous murder charges against Farrigo had been dismissed. Farrigo was sentenced to 48 months of probation for the aggravated discharge of a firearm and not sentenced separately for involuntary manslaughter. Legal rules of one act, one crime state that a defendant cannot receive two different sentences if the same conduct is the basis of both convictions. Farrigo also was sentenced to 180 days in jail for the firearm charge, but with credit for the 235 days he's already been in custody, he will serve no extra time. Farrigo also was sentenced to 30 months of probation on the obstruction of justice charge, but that probation period will run concurrently with the longer probation sentence. Judge Jeffrey Geisler said Farrigo had shown remorse and his greatest punishment would be having to live with what he had done. The charges against Farrigo date to October 14th, when Farrigo and his nephew, Justin Lee Murphy Jr., were playing in the 1400 block of East Wellington Way with a .45 caliber handgun Farrigo told police he had found a day earlier near a trash bin. Farrigo was holding the gun and said it went off accidentally, fatally wounding Justin in the back. The obstruction charge alleged Farrigo gave false information to detectives in the early stages of the investigation before admitting what had happened. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Kate Kurtz told Geisler the plea deal had been discussed and approved with both Justin's mother, Brianna Farrigo, who is Farrigo's sister, and the boy's father. Farrigo's mother, Christina Farrigo, broke down in tears in court as she described a shooting tragedy that had torn her family apart. She said her son, who had an intellectual disability, had spent long periods living with his sister's family and had grown very close to his nephew. A letter to the court from Brianna Farrigo said her brother should face consequences, but the knowledge he had killed a child he loved would punish him forever. Kurtz said the prosecution didn't dispute this was a reckless accident, but she had argued at some length of prison time was necessary to act as a deterrent and mark the seriousness of destroying a life. Geisler said he was willing to take a chance on Farrigo's non-custodial rehabilitation, but warned him of severe consequences if he failed probation. He also ordered Farrigo to undergo a mental health evaluation. Here's an item from today's Daily Digest entitled, Health Strategies, Focus of Meeting. Bloomington. The Bloomington and Peoria Invest Health teams will host Building Healthy Communities, Development Strategies to Improve Health and Well-Being from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thursday at the Gateway Building in Peoria. Development strategies to improve communities' health will be discussed. The event is funded by Invest Health, a project of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Reinvestment Fund. Local team members include City of Bloomington, Advocate Broman Medical Center, McLean County Health Department, Mid-Central Community Action, and OSF Healthcare. And here's an item entitled, Roadwork Nears Completion. Workers continue progress on replacing a sanitary sewer near the intersection of East Mulberry and North Linden Streets, Normal. The construction is planned to be complete by next weekend's opening of the Special Olympics Illinois Summer Games. From today's area calendar, we have Travel Photography with Don Chamberlain, 7 p.m. today, Thursday, at the Bloomington Public Library Community Room. Also in the area calendar for tomorrow, Friday, Summer Reading Program, now through July 28th, Cheney's Grove Township Library, Saybrook, grades 1 to 8. Each participant will receive prizes when they achieve their reading goals. And here's a notice. Core Life Eatery opens Thursday in Bloomington Normal. Core Life Eatery, 115 South Veterans Parkway, Normal, will open to the public at 11 a.m. June 7th. That's today. The eatery began in Syracuse, New York in 2015 and features healthy, nutritious food without GMOs, high fructose corn syrup, and artificial colors or flavors. Its menu includes greens bowls, grains bowls, broth bowls, warm rice bowls, and plates. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for June 7th. Please stay tuned.